to Pro Bono Perspectives, live from Brooklyn, where the city never sleeps and purpose is more than just a buzzword. Pro Bono Perspective brings together leaders that have traveled across sectors, industries, and experiences on their path to creating change for the communities in which they live and work. And I'm your host, Danielle Holly, CEO of Common Impact, a national nonprofit that designs skills-based volunteer programs that amplify the impact of social change organizations by harnessing the talents and skills of private sector employees. I am lucky enough to cross paths with these leaders every day through my work with Common Impact and can't wait to bring you behind the scenes to share their stories.
Hi, everyone. This is Danielle Holly, and I am thrilled to be joined here today by Tim Smith, who is the Senior Director of the Boston Foundation and the head of the Pledge 1% Boston chapter, which is powered by the Boston Foundation. And we'll learn a lot more of that to come in our conversation. In his day-to-day work with the Boston Foundation, Tim advises individuals and companies in the region on a variety of philanthropic offerings, including donor advised funds. And prior to joining the foundation in 2016, and when I first met Tim, he was coming from San Francisco, over a decade in San Francisco, most notably as the CEO of the Full Circle Fund. And in his spare time, which I don't believe he actually has, but let's suspension of disbelief. He sits on the board of a fantastic organization called Tech Goes Home and on the advisory board of Boston Private Bank, the selection advisory council of the Green Light Fund. Oh my goodness. If you couldn't tell, he is really dedicated. This is not just his work, but his life's work, building the capacity of nonprofits to achieve their mission, which of course is a passion and excitement that Common Impact shares. Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So do you really have spare time? Let's start there.
We were just talking offline a little bit about our search for the right amount of coffee and the right roaster of coffee each day. So in my free time, I find coffee to motivate me and get me through the day. It's limited, but I find pockets here and there. And when you're grounded in your work, I think a lot of what you do can feel somewhat like free time.
Right, right. Well, and when you, we were just talking before I hit record, you know, at the end of the day, you can be tired, but when you know that you're doing what you want to and should be doing in the world, there's something that just continues to fuel you around
I call that motivated exhaustion.
I like that. So what is it? What is your fuel? What motivates you on a daily basis?
What really grounds me in the work, I think, is all the resources out there for that could be kind of more strategically and collaboratively driven to nonprofits that are proven models and even emerging models. So, you know, if you think about philanthropy, there's $300 billion plus annually that is driven to nonprofits. If companies and individuals and families and community foundations and great organizations like Common Impact could all work together on different initiatives and in a partnership mindset, I think we can affect really sustainable change. So that's one thing, is just kind of a quest for amazing collaboration. The other thing is just the income inequality, especially in our cities. I think in Boston and New York and San Francisco and some others, there's just this booming innovation economy of technology, life sciences, and other sectors that, you know, are creating amazing jobs and opportunities for a lot of people, including those in need. But, you know, the other side of the coin is, you know, rising housing costs and transportation issues and homelessness and things like that, that, you know, I think that there's a balance of and kind of an obligation that companies can do something to also support their communities. And so there's kind of inspiring folks that drives me. I'd say those are the two things, collaboration and inspiring folks to do good.
Well, and one of the ways in which you do that is through Pledge 1%, which is such a cool initiative, encourages companies at a national scale and then has local chapters, I believe, to give 1% of their equity, time, product, or profit back to their community. Tell us how this works. It seems like that excitement you have to inspire and convert individuals, right? I mean, I imagine that is really central to your work at Pledge 1%. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the impetus for Pledge 1%, it started out in the Bay Area. Mark Benioff, who's the founder of the large company Salesforce.com, which a lot of nonprofits use for their CRM, has always been philanthropic, but decided back in you know 20 years ago almost, when Salesforce was starting, to put giving back not only at the forefront of branding and how they position the company, but actually in the incorporation of the company. And so as the company grows, 1% has always of equity, which is now extremely significant. If anyone reads the news, Mark Benioff is extremely wealthy, and the company is doing extremely well. Also, he's extremely philanthropic, and as is the company. But basically, 1% of the company is kind of, without getting too technical, earmarked to give back. So if the stock increases and the performance of the company increases, the impact to the community increases. So because they did that really early on, over $300 million, I believe, has been funneled to nonprofits through Salesforce.org over the years. But then they also took a different approach by looking at employee time. And this is where I think organizations like Common Impact and others are so great, is it's not just about the money. It's they give their employees 1% of their time off to volunteer. And it's usually skills-based volunteerism. And it's usually with vetted partners. But if you think about 1% of time, it ends up being about 6 days a year. You can make tremendous impact in that amount of time. Offline, Danielle and I were just talking about a day of service and the tremendous impact that could have. Imagine that times six. And then they also, you know, their product is designed to give back as well. So they give free licenses to nonprofits as well. So Mark, such an inspirational leader, along with others, had, you know, there's one thing to do one thing for your own company, but what's been great about that program is they've inspired that. And now it's just reached 6,000 companies to kind of follow suit. And it's not just following that own model. It's them kind of creating their own 1%. Like, what does that mean for them? And so just reached 6,000 in the world. You know, a lot of those are in the Bay Area. A lot of those are in Sydney. And then in Boston, we've just surpassed 100. And we launched a local kind of chapter of that a couple of years ago. And so there's definitely something there. And it's not just around giving back. It's also really helpful for the company in terms of kind of recruiting new talent and what millennials are looking at when they're thinking about a company to join. So it's both kind of altruism and also really good for investors and also for from an HR standpoint.
Well, and that's where I think this space has grown so much, is that the business metrics are just incredibly clear.
It's indisputable. Right?
Investment.
Indisputable.
Right. Exactly. Yet still some companies have trouble making commitments of that size. What would you point to as some of the barriers? I mean, we see it every day from a pro bono perspective, right? It makes sense on paper and the metrics, and there are proof points that demonstrate this, but it can still feel like a pretty significant investment. Have you seen themes from your conversations with companies in Boston or more broadly on what's hard?
I think, you know, a lot of the companies we work with, even some of the larger tech companies, because of kind of the stakeholder involvement and whatnot, the resources aren't, you know, companies take a long time to become profitable, let alone have money for philanthropy. So I think that there's a perception that you need to do a ton. And so our kind of point of view is, you know, you can do a lot with say you have $25,000 a year. You could build a great partnership with one nonprofit in a way that has significant impact on a specific program of that nonprofit, in a way that engages your employees with that nonprofit. And that is just kind of leveraged and multiplied. And so I think there's kind of fear that that they're not able to do enough. And they kind of compare themselves to the larger companies. And so I think we're trying to build benchmarks to, you know, what are some easy turnkey things you can do? You know, a certain amount of stock per quarter, a certain amount of profit, you know, a certain percentage of sales of a specific product. Time off is great. You know, a first Friday of a quarter where employees know that that's the time to give back. Things like that are predictable, but then can set a really great kind of foundation for the company that when it's time and when the company's succeeding, there's already that foundation to build on. You're not starting from zero.
And in all this, what we see a common impact and just in the industry more broadly is corporate social responsibility, corporate citizenship. Some people call it human social responsibility. There are all sorts of terms that speak to the core concept that companies are contributing not just to a bottom line, but to tangible social benefit. And that space has moved so far in the past 10, 20 years now, where there are very few companies who are not doing anything, right? Or not saying anything about what they're doing to benefit society. It's a dimension of competition. And so the dollars and the product donations and the volunteers, the talent that are available now to nonprofits to help them solve their challenges are ostensibly much broader and larger than they were before. In that landscape, what do you see as the role of philanthropy? You sit at the Boston Foundation, which has had a traditional and innovative role in philanthropy in the Boston area. How do you see that role evolving, or is it?
I think what you just said just hit something. There was just an aha moment that was probably driven by the coffee I had, but also what you said. And it's really around the importance of a strategic partner, and a strategic partner like us at the foundation, like you at Common Impact, that can play the role of a resource allocator and strategic advisor on where resources can be leveraged most effectively. Because you'd imagine what you just said around every company is doing something, every company is talking about what they're doing. They're all kind of committing different types of resources. On the nonprofit side, that can be quite overwhelming, right? If I'm an executive director of a $1 million nonprofit, I'm the chief fundraiser, I'm also the chief program person, I'm trying to manage a staff, and then I have 10 companies that are like, here, use my product, might come with a grant, or here, I want to give you a grant. Can you create a volunteer day for us? And these are all really important things for companies, and we need to embrace the kind of brand that they want to build, because they're also giving back. But I think the importance of something like a community foundation and Common Impact is to do that strategically in a way that doesn't overwhelm the nonprofits, and also connects the companies with the right type of nonprofits that can actually handle those resources and affect change with them.
Right. And to be able to partner in earlier stages, I've seen as well, right? Because that the corporate relationship can come along with a set of power dynamics, which is not to say that the traditional funder fundee doesn't have that, but there can be a different level and a different set of dynamics at play. And one of the other dimensions that I've seen is that there is a role that philanthropy is willing to play that companies are not, and maybe shouldn't, right? Where there isn't a business value to every social challenge out there. And that doesn't mean that those shouldn't be addressed. And while I think the ability to define business return and value intangible and direct is so important to this space and to creating more balanced partnerships with nonprofits, because when you have a mutually beneficial relationship, stronger partnerships, stronger outcomes writ large. But the role of philanthropy is and will continue to be incredibly important in the risk taking in the early stage and in those social challenges where you can't see an immediate business return, at least initially. So in the context of the worlds that you and I operate in, right, the kind of shared value and these overarching initiatives, I worry sometimes that we minimize the role of more traditional philanthropy. And it seems like you've found a nice balance for that within your role, but also within some of the work that you've done.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's yes. Yes. I think that's very important. I think you mentioned the word partnership a lot. And I think when I go back to your first question around what motivates me every day, it's kind of creating those partnerships that are sustainable and can grow over time, but that are manageable. And so I think that that's really the role and obligation that we have, you, Danielle, and your team and us here at the foundation, is to play that conduit and push back on both sides in a respectful way. And I think that that's a really powerful, not in the traditional word way of saying powerful, but it's a really kind of important position to be in that we should take quite seriously.
And how do you think the next generation is shaping philanthropy? And I think about this within the corporate sector. You know, we hear from our corporate partners and companies all the time. The millennial generation is demanding that social impact be a part of their day job. They're making their career decisions based on it. And we want to be competitive for a workforce. And so it's important for us to not only do this stuff, but to talk about it and to make sure that it's a prominent part of our brand. And so that is how I see the workforce shifting the corporate and CSR landscape. Do you see an analog in philanthropy, corporate or otherwise?
I think there's a bigger drive to give back. And that means, you know, for a lot of the kind of next gen people, that's less resources, but more kind of engagement right now. But the research that's going to switch over time, right? Those that are creating wealth now are the next generation of these large family foundations or large donor advised funds at community foundations and whatnot. So I think there's more engagement. There's more folks joining boards. There's more folks wanting to volunteer. There's more folks wanting to work for social impact companies that are actually their business models to give back. So I think there's lots more options now. And I think people are having a longer term look at being philanthropic. And I also think the term philanthropy is changing to include volunteerism and all different types of assets. So there is a shift. And I think that there's a real opportunity to bring where there's still the majority of the wealth is still with some of the larger, more traditional philanthropists. Those folks can do a huge talk about legacy. If they can, if we can get them all working together to bring up the next generation, not only their children, but others, and learn from what they've done right and wrong. I think there's a huge way to just change the world together.
And when you think about the other side of the house, so we've been talking about the kind of resource, the philanthropy, the corporate side. When you think about the building of nonprofit capacity, you've focused your work on that in many of your different roles and specifically seem to be thinking about how technology can be a force for good. How did you first gain optics? I think about the world of nonprofit capacity building as a wonky, nerdy little world that I am certainly a part of, where we get really heated about debates around overhead and making sure nonprofits have what they need to grow and scale. What was your entrance into this work?
So there was actually a really interesting experience where I'm not going to age myself here, but I was asked to scan a document and then have it all e-signed. And I didn't really know how to, I was volunteering at a nonprofit at the time. I didn't really know how to do those things. and then, you know, fast forward 10 years and I'm running a paperless foundation in San Francisco. Technology is not going anywhere. And so we're needing to embrace it. Folks are using technology to fundraise now. Companies are more reliant on it than ever. And it's a real tool for efficiency. Think about how we used to have to print things out, sign them, scan them, and email them back. Think about what a fax machine is. Tell me where to buy one. They probably cost, you know, $10,000 on eBay now. Talk about vintage. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a huge movement to just being more efficient. And I think donors and other philanthropists are holding nonprofits to, you know, a level of accountability around resource allocation. So they're kind of holding them accountable to be efficient, and then technology is an efficiency tool. And so I think the how we can teach and train and nonprofit professionals and leaders to both embrace technology, learn about new technologies that are right for them. It's a huge opportunity. And that's where companies like Salesforce have grown so significantly. And DocuSign, which is, you know, an electronic signature company also based in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are these packages of products and services that are reliable, that are easy to implement, that can just save a ton of administrative time. I think that's the biggest, what's the word, kind of opportunity that we have as, that I say we, that those in the private sector have is kind of training folks to use efficiency tools.
Well, and I know San Francisco and Silicon Valley are in some ways a world away from each other, but not super geographically far. In your time in San Francisco, curious how the proximity to the tech sector impacted any of your thoughts around this. I think of Silicon Valley as having what I would describe as a mixed reputation in terms of their social impact and their approach to philanthropy. Curious what your optics were when you were up close and personal in this space over there.
Yeah, being removed for a couple of years now, I was just back there a couple of weeks ago, actually, for a series of meetings. And one thing that struck me is it's a pretty transient city and region out there. You kind of might move there for a few years, try to build a company or work at a company that's being built, and it succeeds and you cash out and you move to the suburbs, or it doesn't succeed and you can't afford to live there. And so both of those are challenges for nonprofits and the city and the region where there's extreme homelessness, extreme local need, but people that aren't necessarily connected to the city from kind of a legacy or family standpoint and are unlikely to be there for more than, say 3 to 5 years anyway. So that's probably part of why some of the problems have persisted or worsened there. The flip side of that is there's so many resources from financial capital to human capital to products that are right in the heart of the city, the heart of where the social issues permeate, that that are doing a ton, right? Twitter, bought a city block, but now has a physical center to teach people how to use the internet and do their taxes and whatnot. So there's a lot of examples of how what I just said is not the case from a company standpoint. I think from an individual standpoint, the fact that a lot of people aren't from there and aren't likely to stay there makes it hard to connect to local community. And that's where I think Boston has a real upside, right? A lot of folks that are here went to school here and have decided to stay here. A lot of folks like me have moved back here after realizing that another region's not for them. And so we see a lot more local commitment to local causes because folks are likely to grow their families here and have their legacy be local.
I remember when I moved to Boston for business school when I was in my mid-20s, I thought I was going to spend 2 years there and come right back to New York, but I ended up being there for 7 years because it's just a city that it's a sticky city.
Especially in August. Yep.
Yeah. So Boston and San Francisco both have been compared as cities who have a thriving social corporate sector where this type of work, this cross-sector next generation philanthropy conversation is really hot. Describe it. You mentioned a little bit about just the populations and the stickiness of the different cities. Anything else that comes up for you in terms of what's the same, what's different, what can we make more, what can we broaden and share with other cities, and what's really based in a region and place-based? I ask this in the larger context of this constant tension that we're seeing in the corporate and philanthropic space, where there's a real desire to act globally and to go big and to scale, but to also make programs and investment really relevant for the regions that they're serving. And so curious if you have, having lived in these two cities, any headlines that arise for you?
I think the one thing that was surprising moving back here, but also that I've been really impressed by is kind of industry-led collectives that are getting both individual philanthropists and also companies and corporate leaders at the table around specific issues. So, the two main drivers in the innovation economy locally are life sciences and technology. And there's two really established organizations. One has just started in the last couple of years called Life Science Cares, which is a collective of, countless life sciences companies that are each putting both financial and also kind of human capital assets at the table and playing kind of a go-between between those companies and their nonprofit grantees. Technology also has a separate organization here. New England Venture Capital Association is running a program called Hack Diversity that's getting tech companies, life sciences, and VC firms to all work together to bridge the talent divide and access to IT jobs for Black and Latino folks that are from underserved communities here. And so I think that industry-specific approach is quite unique and powerful and puts a lot of resources together in the same room just naturally. So I'd like to see that replicated in other regions if it's not already. I didn't notice that out in San Francisco. Things were a little more kind of segmented or ad hoc. So I think that's a lot of industry folks working together to affect change together, I think is something I've been really impressed by.
So bringing it from the macro to you in your career, curious when you think back on what you've done, the different roles you've played, both within your full-time jobs and externally with all that spare time we've been talking about, what has been most rewarding, or what's the moment where you thought, okay, I'm doing it?
There was a night where I was pretty aimlessly in my mid-20s thinking about going to law school. I had taken my LSATs and deposited on a law school, and really happy I didn't. But there was this one night where I was going to retake the LSATs, and I was up and I was taking them at 8 o'clock, and it was about 2:30 a.m. I had pre-test anxiety, and then I went to take the test and I walked out halfway through. And at that point, I said, this just doesn't, I've always had anxiety anyway, but I said, this doesn't feel, something about this path for me does not feel right. And the next day I started volunteering for a nonprofit out in San Francisco. And since then, I just decided to make that my life's mission. I thought I needed to be a lawyer to do public interest law to make sustainable change. But the more I learned through volunteerism and kind of one-off engagements about nonprofits and got to know people working in that space, I got to learn about kind of that's the way to affect change is organizations that are incorporated mm-hmm. to do good. And the $300 billion I talked about, when I learned that statistic, I was like, wow, because you don't really see the impact that that's having. And so that's what kind of drives me. That one moment in time of walking out of the LSATs, I will never forget what I was wearing. I will never forget what section I was on. There was this logic game section where I was trying to have to decide, you know, if horse number one didn't have a left foot and horse number three had stripes, what was horse number nine's middle name? So, you know, think about that. And then I don't need to. Yeah. Or don't.
Right? Or don't, please.
Please don't. Just kidding. Walking out of that was really influential. And I've kind of never looked back.
What's the best part of your day?
So I had a little time to think about this, but I go to the same Dunkin' Donuts every morning, and it's happened a couple times recently where we were just talking about coffee beforehand. So I'm going to bring it full circle to coffee. No pun intended on my past employer, but I was given a free coffee again today, and all for smiling. So I would just encourage folks to smile and treat people with respect,
really?
And you never know, it will come back your way.
I smile at my barista every single morning, and not only do I not get a free coffee, but I don't get a smile back. You must be doing something right.
Well, I've been smiling at her for 3 years, so.
It's the long game, right?
It's a common theme from our discussion today. We're in it for the long haul.
I love it.
The pot at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, you got to share some of that wealth and show me a picture of that smile. Fine, it's working for you.
I'm not sharing the coffee, though.
Okay, that is a deal. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Always so much fun to talk to you, and it makes me want to do it more. But appreciate you taking a little bit of that lack of spare time you have and sharing it with us and just sharing your stories with our listeners.
This was really fun. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Pro Bono Perspectives today. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out our website at www.commonimpact.org. Leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Tune into our upcoming episodes to hear from everyday leaders using their skills to help their communities.